Well, you know, Sumerian teachers and people of letters were not and could not really be systematic philosophers, you know, or profound thinkers. They were keen observers of nature and the immediate world around them, but the long list of plants, animals, metals, stones, etc., that the professors had taken and tried to put together, and I mean professors, because the Sumerians were very, very educated people. They weren't just some kind of cave dwellers like people think that they were. To say that the Sumerian forerunners of modern cultural anthropology really kind of did a lot of research. These people were doing research in 6,000-7,000 BC and actually putting together different things to come up with different sets of words and et cetera, et cetera. However, many different things circulated. And what I mean by that was different words circulated for other words, and all kinds of different type of things were kind of created out of this maelstrom. And the maelstrom was an argument. And the Enlil, the air god, you know, kind of set his mind to bring forth all types of trees, grain, and establishing an abundance and the prosperity of the land. But Emesh and Ten, the brothers, are created, and Enlil assigns each the specific duties. And Ten made the ewe give birth to the lamb, the goat gave birth to the kid, the cow and calf to multiply, cream and milk to increase. In the plain, he made the rejoice of the heart, wild goat, sheep, and donkey. Now, these are things that Enlil is claiming that, or, you know, writers are claiming to Enlil. You know, we see that there are many, many characters within the connotation, and even mentions of a sun god named Utu. So we see different creations, and I'll give you an example. Her brother, the hero, the warrior Utu, says to the pure Inanna, "Oh, my sister, let the shepherd marry you. Oh, maid Inanna, why are you unwilling? His cream is good, his milk is good. The shepherd, everything his hand touches is bright. Oh, Inanna, let the shepherd Dumuzi marry you." Now, we're talking Dumuzi, so we're talking late Sumerian. "Oh, you who are bedecked with jewels, why are you unwilling? His good cream, he will eat with you. Oh, protector of the king, why are you unwilling?" Inanna's answer, of course, is a flat refusal. She is determined to marry the farmer Enkidu, which I don't know, it doesn't sound like it's related to Enkidu, but "me, the shepherd, shall not marry. In his new garment he shall not drape me. His fine wool shall not cover me." And this is where Inanna's kind of showing her independence. "Me, the maid, the farmer, shall marry. The farmer who makes the plants grow abundantly. The farmer who makes grain grow abundantly." Now, we see some different things here, because we see the father being the god of the harvest. The father, Ninazu, which is a line for Enlil. Now, related to the tree going down on the side of Enlil. Now, we all know that Ninazu is the father of Ningishida, who later becomes Serpent Zeta, who later becomes Satan. So we see that father particular, you know, thing. The fragments of all of these different writings are just, wow, you know, I mean, trying to decipher this for most people is something that gives you, you know, makes your head hurt. Now, we see after the lines of uncertain meaning, which I mean uncertain meaning because they're kind of like unreadable. And even people like Irving Finkel, who is somebody that I work with quite a bit, they just don't know what these lines mean. We can fill in the blanks, of course, but when we talk about the shepherd idea in Anana, for an example, the farmer more than I, the farmer more than I, the farmer, what has he more than I? Akimadu, the man of dike, ditch, and plow, more than I, the farmer, that he has more than I, should he give me his black garment? I would give him, the farmer, my black ooh for it. Should we give him his white garment? I would give him, the farmer, my white ooh for it. Ooh, talking to an animal. I would pour him, the farmer, my yellow milk for it. Should he pour me his good beer? How about that, beer? I would pour him, the farmer, my kism milk for it. I would pour him, the farmer, should he pour me his seductive beer? Wow, get her drunk, bro. I would never pour him, the farmer, my plant milk for it. I would give him his good portions. I would give him, the farmer, my intruder milk. Should he give me his good bread? I would never give him, the farmer, my honey cheese for it. Should I give him the small beans? I would give him, the farmer, my small cheeses for them. After all, I shall have eaten, shall have drunk. I shall leave him for the extra cream. I would leave him the extra milk. More than I, the farmer, what he has more than I. Now, we could look at this as a lot of things. This might be some form of hidden idea that there's sexuality, but we can see that the Sumerians, in just this brief passage, were very much into categorizing. And I don't think that anyone really understands the categories that they placed different things into. We know that they actually practiced some type of engineering of food. We know that they created medicine from crops. We know they created different cheeses. We know they invented beer. We know this. We know that they had pharmacies. We know that they had doctors. Almost, but do we really know how far that really stretched or how extensive that was? I can tell you this, that through my studies, I've found that these passages, even though sort of misleading, sometimes contain philosophical messages, also contain historical lines. These historical lines allow us, the people who study Sumeria, to study and kind of learn what the people were like. I mean, these people were farming, and they were farming for the benefit of a community, not farming for the benefit of capitalism. And I'm certainly not railing against capitalism whatsoever, but, you know, we find in the story, the shepherd, he's sitting on the riverbank rejoicing because his argument had convinced Inanna and induced her to change her mind. There he meets Enkimdu and starts to quarrel. He rejoiced at the riverbank alone. He rejoiced on the riverbank. The shepherd on the riverbank rejoiced. The shepherd, moreover, led the sheep onto the riverbank, to the shepherd walking to and fro on the riverbank. To him, who is the shepherd and the farmer approached, the former Enkidu approached. In his plane, the shepherd, Enkimendu, not related to Enkidu. In his plane, the shepherd on his plane starts a quarrel with him. The shepherd Dumuzi in his plane starts a quarrel with him. But Dumuzi refuses to quarrel and agrees to allow Dumuzi's flocks the pastures that are anywhere in his territory. I find that rather interesting. Here we're talking about Dumuzi, this story that goes on, and it's almost like we've got this whole rivalry. We know that Inanna, also Inini, is a goddess. So we see the interaction with humans and goddesses, or humans and gods, quite readily in Sumeria. They lived hand in hand. But we also see that they categorize different things. And I'm going to go more into depth in that in the days ahead. kind of in some new learning modules to help you. I'm going to talk a little bit about school, the store system, etc. But let's talk a little bit about how these different foods were categorized, actually held in a format of silo. And I know some of the stuff seems unbelievable because some of y'all realize, hey, you know, this stuff is starting to sound like it's modern day back then. We don't know. Well, you got to think, these people were around for 10,000 years, longer than we have been today. Can you imagine the things that they invented? The things that we'll never see? Take a car and put it in the desert for 5,000 years. It'll be dust. I don't care what it's made out of. Synthetic materials, whatever. I mean, the elements are going to eat up anything. And we know these people categorized in actually metallurgy. They categorize in crops. So a lot of these different things are gone. We know they had multiple types of beer, as many as 20 different types of flavored beer and ale, which was almost unheard of. They're not even given credit for this. Everyone just goes, oh yeah, that's all coming from France and Italy and, you know, medieval times and things. But these people were making beer, wine, ale, and other things of alcoholic content. They were filtering their water. They were filtering their water and then producing these items out of wheat. They were creating recipes. They were selling this in the form of a liquor store. Not a liquor store like we know it, but a liquor store to how they do it. Categorized alcohols. Categorized grades. Their markets were huge. I'm talking many, many blocks of a city. And their cities were huge. But it wasn't so much, people weren't just starved out. People were given things. And it's not like, it was almost a form of utopia for these people. But they knew about metal. They worked with lapis, which was an incredibly great stone. They worked with different types of corals. They worked with shells. They worked with sandstones. They categorized this. They actually categorized bricks. They categorized the design of a brick, how large a brick was. I mean, can you imagine? Maybe they had a Home Depot? We don't know. They categorized tools. Different types of tools for different types of actions. So almost people could learn at a very, very high rate of speed. These people weren't just stupid. These people knew this was a hoe. This is an axe. And even though the designs today might not look similar, but these people knew how to categorize things. They knew how to categorize swords. They knew how to categorize different food. They knew how to preserve food and put it away for years, including fish, including meat. Their diet would have comprised heavily of goats, lambs, wild animals, and possibly in some regions, cows. Now, we don't really see a lot of skeletal remains of cows, but that doesn't mean they weren't eating beef. We know that they ate swine or pigs. We know that they ate shellfish. They weren't practicing some kind of idea of Islam or Judaism. They were just eating what was there. We don't see them eating bugs. We don't see them eating, you know, beyond meat. We don't know exactly what the extent of herding was in some regions. Some regions probably comprised of a very strong diet of fish, especially with the Tigris-Euphrates River and the abundance of fish at that time before chemical pollution. And yes, there was chemical pollution as well. And some of the philosophers and people spoke about the importance of not harming the earth. But you got to remember, they didn't have chemical plants per se. They had apothecaries. They were mixing different things, but they were mixing it internally and not just pouring it in the river. Primarily what was polluting the river would have been waste. But anyway, they categorized different materials to allow them to do everything from greasing wheels to, you know, different things, lubrications of doors. I mean, we don't really know everything that they had, but it's amazing enough. But onward, I'm going to talk about this in the days ahead. Things like the schools, things like that. So this will kind of be an educational type process. And I'll throw a little bit of the deities in there as well. So that way you got an idea. Because man and woman at the time, they weren't slaves like people like to say. They were just mental, I guess, mentally connected. Mentally, see what I mean? Connected to the deity. Some people believe that the deities walked freely amongst the humans. And I'm beginning to believe that, judging from the creation of the buildings and some of the ways that they were categorized as different deities. And that's, I believe that the deities at that time were mixing with what they would call humans. So, who knows? But anyway, more to come. Thank you for listening today, and please support my channel by sharing and liking and doing the other stuff. Thank you.